It's episode 148. It is February 2nd, 2020. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
And this is Fancy Ramen Podcast, episode 148. Did I already say that? I said that.
You did say that. Welcome, everyone, to the Fancy Ramen Podcast, episode 148.
I'm going to smash on my keyboard as much as possible during this episode.
Okay.
Oh, hi, Catching Flack.
What have you guys been up to this week?
Have I told you about my... Wait, did I lose access to my PlayStation account last week or this week?
You haven't talked about it. I know that much.
Yeah, oh. What the hell happened there?
Sweet. So, I guess that means it happened on Monday. Yeah, it happened on Monday. I got an email from Sony at 4 a.m., saying thank you for updating your login information. And then at 4:26, I got an email that said, thank you for purchasing FIFA 20.
You've been hacked, of course, my guy.
And of course, I didn't see this until Monday, like in the afternoon. So I was like, okay, well, let me call Sony real fast and figure some things out. So I was like, hey. So I dialed out to Sony. They said, we've got unusually high call volume. Call back later. And or if you need immediate support, chat in to us online.
So that's really a great indicator.
So I was like, okay, well, I'll just hop on to Sony's website, go to Sony support. And they were like, our chat systems are down. Call in if you need help. So it was like 30 minutes of me trying to get in touch with Sony and not being able to get in touch with Sony. Then eventually, after like the third or fourth call, it finally said, okay, cool. If you need help, please wait. And it was like a 2-second wait. So they didn't have any kind of like a wait period at all. And so I got in touch with somebody. They're like, okay, cool. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. Excellent. Cool. We're having scheduled server maintenance. Please give us a call in 30 minutes. And my first question was, who has scheduled server maintenance at 5 o'clock on a Monday? You know who has scheduled server maintenance at 5 o'clock on a Monday?
I mean, PlayStation does now.
No one. No one does it on the first day of the week after everyone is getting off of work.
No, normally it's like 2 a.m. on a Sunday.
Exactly. Or TD Ameritrade, a little inside baseball, has ours on between midnight and 2 a.m. on Tuesdays.
Is it inside baseball because they own a baseball park?
We do own a baseball park. But so it's like, okay, give us a call in 30 minutes. So I started making dinner. And while making dinner, I called back in and they were like, oh yeah, sweet. We've got you verified. Our systems are back up. How can we help? And I was like, cool. My account was compromised. There was a purchase made on my account, and I also don't have access to it. And they're like, excellent, we'd love to help you. I was like, excellent, cool. So he's like, let's get you back into the account first. And I was like, okay. So we got back into my account, and then I was like, cool. Now, what about this purchase that was made? Yeah, we can't do anything about that. Call your bank. Okay.
So they put you back in control of your account, but refunding is out of the question, right?
Yep. So I called my bank, got my card canceled, and then told them like, hey, there's going to be a charge that's going to come up. It's not me. And they're like, okay, cool. We've canceled everything. Got you.
$5,000.
Got you.
That's right. I not only hacked your account, and I'm excited to talk about my gameplay of FIFA 20, but also I bought like 40 more copies to share with my closest friends.
But yeah, so then after that, me and Lizzie decided to sit down and watch a movie. So Lizzie signed into her PlayStation and all of the games were locked.
Because someone else is on, yeah.
Yeah, because my PlayStation, her PlayStation was no longer our primary active PlayStation. Mm-hmm. So I called Sony back and was like, hey, my account was compromised and yada, yada, yada. I don't have access to my game library. And they were like, we're sorry, we're having scheduled maintenance happening right now. Give us a call in 2 minutes. And I was like, this is some BS. You guys are not having scheduled maintenance. You're having system issues. Just say system issues. So I hung up with that lady, called them back immediately. And the guy was like, okay, cool. Yeah, here, got your account pulled up. I'm going to send you an email. You're going to have to fill out this form, and then we'll be back in touch with you in 48 hours. And I was like, okay, that's not good, but I will still take it. So we finished watching our movie. I opened the email after that. Well, I saw the email, saw that I got it, but finished watching our movie, which was a great movie. We'll talk about that later.
Mm-hmm.
I opened the email, started filling out their questionnaire. And one of the things on the questionnaire was, what is the serial number of the PlayStation that is currently active?
Hmm.
It's like,
that's when you put in the field stolen or
must be a valid serial number.
Oh, Jesus.
So Yikes. Here's what I do. I call Sony back and their call center is closed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Go so on.
It's like, okay, well, they're not a 24-hour call center and they are now closed. I will just go about my life and give them a call after work on Monday. So I called them back after work on Monday and they're like, oh yeah, nope, that form is just worded very poorly. It's actually asking for the Sony console that you want to activate, even though it clearly says deactivate Sony console. Like, okay, well, so I filled it out and they're like, okay, cool. We'll be in contact in 48 hours. In the interim, while at work on Tuesday and thinking about everything, I was like, you know what? I was going to make the swap over to Xbox eventually when the Series X came out.
It might be a little faster now.
But yeah, we'll speed things up a little bit. So I started perusing Facebook and Craigslist for Xboxes and to find out about like trades and things. And by like Wednesday afternoon, I was like, you know what? GameStop's usually a pretty horrible thing to do, but let's just take a peek. And my God, they were having a deal for, I could trade in my PlayStation 4 Pro for $250, which is more than they usually give, plus 10% extra because of whatever deal they were having for the end of the month of January. And a used Xbox One X refurbished was like $290, $280.
Mm-hmm.
So it ended up being like $25 for an Xbox One. So I'm now a proud owner of an Xbox One X.
And you no longer have a PlayStation then? Well, you no longer have one.
Yes, we still have one PlayStation 4.
Okay.
Wow.
I'm shocked.
I am also surprised.
So this doesn't seem to be like a widespread thing. I'm not seeing anything like on Google News regarding like PlayStation hacked account thing.
Yeah, no, I think it was just me. And I was like, okay, cool. Now my PlayStation account's got like 2-factor authentication on it because that's something that they've added recently-ish.
Within the last couple of years, because I've had it on for a while too.
Oh, okay. Because, yeah, I never even knew it was a thing. But so I've got 2-factor authentication on. We've now down to one PlayStation 4. But I'm really enjoying the Xbox One X since I've been paying for Xbox Game Pass Ultimate for the past couple of months to use on my PC. And Lizzie's PC is using just the Xbox Game Pass for PC. It now gives me access to a bunch of games that I haven't had a chance to play, which I'll be talking about on this week's episode. But before that, I did want to mention, I mentioned that we saw a movie on Monday, right?
Mm-hmm.
As a part of my long-winded story. Well, that movie was The Good Boys. It's a coming-of-age story about some sixth graders who almost said leveled up from fifth grade to sixth grade. But they're just three friends that call themselves... Yes. Yeah. they're just three boys that that graduated and are just starting sixth grade. They don't really know anything, but they still talk like they know everything, as sixth graders do. And it's just a very delightful romp the entire time. They're all going through their own things, dealing with the fact that they like and want to do different things with their lives. So by the end of it, they had to like go their separate ways, but they know they'll always be friends in the end. But it's great. It's got great humor. Like one of the things, they were trying to learn how to kiss. So they were about to Google how to kiss, but then they were like, no, I've got a better idea. Type in boobies. And then the other boy was like, no, I've got an even better idea. And then in like, it zooms in on their Google search and it just goes P-O-R-N. And it's definitely one of those step, I think it was like a stepson porn video that they ended up watching. And the acts that were being that were being shown to the kids like horrified them. They're like, well, we didn't learn. No one kissed in that, at least not on the mouth. And just more and more things happen. So like their family had a CPR doll that was actually just a sex doll that they were trying to kiss. And it's like, why is it sticky? Why is there hair in her mouth?
Oh my God.
Can you repeat what this is again?
The Good Boys.
The Good Boys. Okay.
10 out of 10. Must watch. I like a good coming of age story, and this is a great coming of age story.
Why is it sticky? It tastes kind of funny. CPR doll.
Yeah, they thought it was a CPR doll.
Okay, so it's not like they found it and some adult told them, this is a
CPR
doll. It
says CPR across the front.
It was one of the boys' parents who you find out more things about this boy's parents, because they're like, I found these weapons in my parents' rooms, and it's like dildos, anal beads.
Anal? Did he just say that?
Yes, they like called them anal
beads. The annals of time?
If only.
I think that's annals.
They're like, so as soon as they, they're like, yeah, this is a deadly weapon, the anal beads. It's like, it smells like shit.
Oh.
Yeah, it's...
This sounds like, is this produced by, what is it? Seth Rogen, perhaps?
I don't know who makes this.
Okay.
But it's believable. It would be believable. It's the best. I thoroughly enjoyed that movie.
So...
was followed by the rest of Sony antics.
What I want to know is, when you have a couple that seem very, we'll say, healthy in their bedtime relationship, or their... I'm trying to stay somewhat PC friendly to create like a comical contrast in language.
Oh
here.
Man, it's just too late though. After what what has been done here?
But so my question,
scorched earth policy.
My question essentially is: why would you need the CPR doll, quote unquote? Is it so you can like get the feeling of having a menage a trois without having the third person?
I guess that makes sense.
Honey, I really want to spice things up, but both of us are like really not very charismatic.
Both of us are very monogamous.
Yeah.
Both of us would hate to see the other person with a real, actual, live human being. So,
yeah.
But yeah,
but so the idea is nice.
I think the CPR dummy could really come into play if you also find some like nurse outfits and
it definitely actually had a nurse's outfit.
Oh, there we go. Perfect. You can actually almost make a coherent thought out of this.
But no, the movie is great. It is, once again, 10 out of 10. Must watch. It's a masterpiece. It is the movie of the year for me. Already. Wow. Nothing's going to beat it. 2019 and 2020. Fuck it.
That's a really big swing for, like, I think, I won't get into the Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes scores.
Oh, are they bad?
Respectable.
Well, they don't appreciate a good coming of age story.
I mean,
not like I do.
And like, there's just a sense of comedy that doesn't necessarily resonate with the general public. Like, God, what was it? That anime, Don't Kiss Me, Kiss Him.
Oh, yeah. That was actually really funny.
Yeah, yeah. But like, I don't think it necessarily... I don't know. It's not like the My Hero Academia, fan base is necessarily going to clamor towards that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It doesn't hit the widespread. It's all about that BL, that boys love. But yeah, so that was my week. Just ups and downs and ups and downs. But hey, yeah. I've got access to my Sony account now. My new credit card comes in the mail on, I think, on like Wednesday. And yeah, that's it.
So should I just like clip this one up then? Or
Yeah, should probably just
okay.
I'm on to you, Scott.
Neil, what have you been up to, man?
Non-gaming related.
Yeah. Non-gaming related.
I don't know. I've been mostly video gaming and working. I'm working a lot. It's that year, I should say, without...
Yeah, I was going to say it won't end until December, right? Or I guess November.
Late October. Oh, wait. Late October, and then I'm going to be out of town November, for a week or whatever. And then...
And you'll decide if you want to come back or not.
My mentality is that I enjoy challenges, right?
Mm-hmm.
As we'll probably talk about later. And that when things are difficult, that I tend to... I'm not trying to like boast myself, because I don't think it's necessarily a healthy mentality sometimes, but I like to rise to the occasion, right?
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I'm trying to hint towards, sometimes having a healthy work and work and relax schedule does not always necessarily come naturally to me.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's like, I'm going to have to work 14 hours today, then, or I'm going to have to work 11 or 12 hours today, I tend not to sacrifice any of the other things I would normally do in my day. So I just have to sleep less.
That makes sense.
And most of that other, portion of my day has been dedicated mostly to games and cooking and stuff like that. So I guess the only thing I really have to talk about is... I do have to talk about food. I've been playing a lot of Judgment. What's up?
Oh, I was going to say, you're cooking?
Well, yeah, I do still try to cook and bake. Like, I'm going to make another tiramisu today.
Wasn't last year, all liquid diet?
I only drink at work now. Drink liquid.
I'm like Adam Newman of WeWork, but...
Which, like,
it's not Don Julio.
I mean, obviously, I could talk about it more, but it would just feel like a giant sales pitch, so I'm not going to do that. But the idea is that, you minimize the amount of time you have to spend on food prep, which would be quite a bit of time if I'm trying to eat healthy. Mm-hmm. And then
I am
trying to eat healthy at work, because I tend to feel better when I'm eating healthily versus like eating fast food. Like, even if I had unlimited amounts of money, well, then why would I be working? But let's say in this circumstance, if I go out and get Taco Bell every day, or if I go out and get steak every day in the middle of work, like, it's not going to be conducive to a productive day. I'm going to fall asleep at some point. Anyways, on the food side, I've been playing a lot of Judgment, which is a game that has like a lot of, well, in some cases, food advertisements and lots of real food photography. So I was like dying for Japanese, and I went to Sakurabana and got the tekadon, which is like essentially sushi grade or sashimi grade tuna on top of sushi rice with some like pickled vegetables and other things. And it was amazing, but it was also like $25 just for that one small bowl.
Little strips of fish, yeah.
But damn, it's good.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
And then my paranoia kicked in, and I was like, I wonder if I have a parasite inside of me now.
You do.
Several.
But yeah, no, nothing other than games. What about you, Scott?
I haven't been up to too much. I'm honestly trying to think. We had like a 50 degree day yesterday.
Nice.
It is the middle of January. I don't know what parallel I'm at. The 47th parallel. I'll find out in a moment here. But while I figure out what parallel I'm at, I can say I didn't expect to have a 50 degree day in January. So it is very weird to, let's see, latitude, I'm at about the halfway between the 46th and the 47th parallel. I'm quite north, is what I'm trying to say. And we had like a 50 degree day that was sunny yesterday. And so everybody was outside, including myself and Sierra. We took Yuri to the dog park, and it was very nice. It was immensely muddy. Oh, actually, now that I get a little more accurate picture, I'm at the 47th parallel. I'm like close to on it. So that's cool. But been enjoying the very weird, very like odd weather that's been going on recently. And I'm starting to realize that if climate change becomes such a heavy feedback loop that we don't get like snowy winters anymore, I picked up my snowboarding habit at the worst possible time. I'm very upset. Actually, I'm slightly vindicated though, because my brother-in-law just got step-in bindings, which are pretty slick. Burton started
super
to make
convenient.
Oh yeah, they're also like $800 or something, because you have to buy the bindings and the boots. Like they have to interface with one another, so you have to buy both of them. And it's quite the expensive setup. But I am at least vindicated in the fact that after my snowboard trip, that I don't know, might be like one of the only times I get to go out this year, unless the weather gets colder and we get more snow, that at least my brother-in-law with his like near $1,000 investment will not see almost any returns on it, which makes me feel better after he spent like an entire day at the slopes going, "What's taking you so long?" And then just stepping into his bindings. It got to a point where when I was on the mountain, he said that to me. I was like, "Excuse me, do I know you?" Some people nearby kind of cracked up. But yeah, I guess what I'm saying is like, I'm very worried that my hobby might be dying before I'm really able to like get into it as much as I want to. I've really only been doing it actively for, it's been under 5 years since I really picked it up as a winter sport. So I'm coming to terms with the loss of this skill and the fact that maybe with sea level rise, I should get into like jet skis or like snorkeling or underwater archaeology at this point.
At least, you know, you could always just transition into the very hyper extreme sport of dirt boarding.
Dirt boarding. Holy shit. I've wanted to try that though.
It looks fun.
Yeah. It looks... The problem is when you fall in snow and ice, like first off, you're padded up with normally at least some insulation or a base layer, but like dirt boarding, I feel like you just start shredding your skin.
You gotta wear like a helmet, shin guards, elbow pads, wrist guards,
shin guard. Butt pad. I don't know what they actually call it, but like seat reinforcement.
Okay, so you have two levels of protection when you snowboard. You have, generally speaking, if you're at like a good slope, you have the snow
itself,
and then you have like the coat and insulation, right?
Yes.
So that just means what you need to do is you need to account for the lack of the snow and the insulation, because now you're essentially going to be wearing bubble wrap, and you just need to increase the density of bubble wrap to account for that cushioning.
Yeah, I was wondering if I was going to get the bubble wrap option or like the SWAT team garb option.
Or better yet, not the SWAT team. You go with the canine unit training outfit.
Oh, bomb defusal. Let's go.
Yeah. You'd probably get solid visibility with the little bomb disposal visor. That's a pretty open, open plastic shield.
I'd hope so, because otherwise I can't see the bomb.
I can't see what I'm doing. Cut the red wire. I can't really. Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody loved the Hurt Locker.
That's why the Hurt Locker won an Oscar.
Oh, is that a thing? When you're going to bomb defusal school, because that's a thing.
It is a thing.
Do you just have like a color wheel in front of you that you have to correctly identify each color to?
I mean, I think yeah, I think that you can't do bomb defusal if you're like colorblind, right?
Depending on your color blindness, I guess.
I mean, yeah. So like at some point though, you'd have to test for it, because I don't think a lot of people realize they're colorblind until like the situation arises where it's like, no, this this outfit is gray. No, it's green. What?
Oh God, are we pulling up that stupid dress again?
No, we're not.
No, we're not. We're just saying that if you didn't get to the point where your art career was jeopardized, you got to the point where you would explode when you made a wrong decision.
Right.
Sweet. Oh, my art was just fuzzy, so it's fine. I didn't know I needed glasses until I graduated in art.
Wait, really?
Like mohair?
Oh, no, I knew I needed glasses, but I didn't get glasses until after I got my art degree.
Cookie the Impressionist.
At first, I was hoping you meant like you used fur for your art pieces instead.
That's what I was hoping to.
If only I had thought about that. But nah, it's just I missed our exit to me and Lizzie's apartment building like two times, and Lizzie was like, "Yeah, nah, you getting glasses?" I was like, "I got an art degree; it's fine. My eyes work just fine."
So, as an art graduate, did any bit of you inside die when you realized that you could have made so much money by taping a banana to a wall?
So I had an entire year of hating Jean-Michel Basquiat.
No.
Yeah.
No.
It went from hate to just solid appreciation of how this black person just tricked the white people into thinking his art was good. And then him actually getting trained, and then he makes one piece that's like, this is serviceable, then he dies.
Oof.
But yeah, then there's that artist that just paints white on canvas, white on white canvas, and I was super excited to see him as well, and I saw his pieces in real life, and I was like, yeah, I don't know why I was excited.
There's
about
no texture
this.
To it?
No, there's texture in the way the lights are supposed to be set up. It creates a mood of ambiance in the way the sweeping motions and gestures of his brushstrokes.
I assume that like
artists are just hype men for themselves.
A white paint on white canvas painting could actually be good if it was utilizing the textures and the three-dimensional aspect of it. And like, so let's say if you flash some light on it, if it actually created identifiable scene or object at that point in time, I'd think that would, was cool.
No, that'd be awesome. That's not what this guy gets paid millions of dollars to do. He gets paid to hype up his white paintings that are just white paintings. We went to the MoMA and got to see a guy who went to, what are those things? Junkyards?
Mm-hmm.
And pick out pieces of compacted cars, and he would sell those for millions of thousands of dollars. And those were displayed at the MoMA Art Museum. And it quite literally said in his thing, "Oh, I was very interested in the colors and shapes that these compacted cars made."
So he's not even technically like an artist. He is a appraiser of art, of pre-existing man-made accidental art.
Nope, he's an artist because he coined the things that were being done and convinced some white person to buy them for lots of money. That's what art really is. It's convincing someone to buy something that you spend a little bit of money on and hopefully a lot of time on for a lot of money.
You may also know it by the name of marketing, baby.
The ultimate artist. The ultimate artist.
Since we are already delving into the topic of what is art truly? Should we talk about video games?
Oh, yeah, we should talk about video games. And my God, have I got a video game to talk to you guys about. I was planning on starting my journey with After Party, which since I've got the Xbox and Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, I have access to that for free. But this morning, last night I noticed that The Outer Wilds was on Xbox Game Pass as well.
Okay, Before I let you continue, what I know about this game is that there is something that makes it
unique. Not going to spoil it at all.
Are you still able to talk about it? Because it sounds like it's a pretty critical thing.
I am able to discuss some things about it.
Okay. Because this is absolutely something that I know I want to play.
Oh my gosh.
Once it's out on Steam.
Okay, so here's what I'm going to say about The Outer Wilds. Scott, you were right in your depression of not playing it last year. So the game quite literally starts off with you pressing X to wake up, and you wake up in front of a campfire with a guy who you find out is a repairman for a ship saying, oh yeah, cool, today's your launch day. You're an astronaut. This is your first time going out into space. We are a spacefaring people. Go get the launch codes from the observatory. And you're like, all right. So you're going to walk around. You get to explore some things, do some minor tutorial type things. And so what you know about this game is that you're an astronaut. You're exploring space and learning about the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's about all you guys know about it, right?
No, I actually know the core mechanic of the game.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Which makes me understand that getting those launch codes, I know what I would write to make that happen. And so I have a very good idea of what happens next.
I'm going to use the restroom and I'll let you guys discuss this to greater detail, okay?
Wow, Neil knows nothing about this, huh?
I know absolutely nothing about it. I have a good friend that basically knows how I like to play games, which is be in complete
darkness.
Typically. And so he's just like, don't look anything up.
Neil, you can't. Okay.
So Neil, the only thing I was going to say was that the space exploration is like really awesome, like the way they do it. Because you control thrusters from in front of you, behind you, to the left and to the right, and you've got an up and down thruster.
Well, no, I need to use the restroom anyway, so
okay, you go. I'll be back. Restroom.
Send me a Discord message when you know it's clear for me to come back. Okay.
I don't think we're going to spoil anything. I know how to talk about this too without spoiling it.
I'm also going to do like that's kind of like what I wanted to talk about. But I will let you know that core mechanic that Neil doesn't want to hear about, after playing the game for a little bit, it's just like, wait, what the fuck just happened? And then it's like, oh, okay. And then after playing for a little bit longer, it's like,
you're counting on it.
Yes. And then you're like, okay, wait, I want to see what actually happens. Oh my gosh.
So yeah, without spoiling the mechanics, so A, Neil can edit the podcast, which that's also kind of funny. is he really going to bother with editing? But two, without spoiling it, I think what we can say, and this is really the only thing that I do know about this game. One, once again, this is for listeners who are in Neil's category of wanting to be as uninformed as possible when playing a game, which oftentimes I don't think we hide even the mechanics and like the principle of a game as much as we will for this one, but I understand why.
Oh yeah. It was novel for me because I didn't know anything about this game besides its title and that you wanted to play it.
This game creates a gameplay loop, and you know, that's as far as I can go in describing it, that I think it's just like, it's very, very cool for people who want to experiment cause and effect. And yeah, and because it's an exploration game as well, the cause and effect should always be valuable, whether you're able to impact something or you find out that what you do is completely pointless. Neil, it's totally fine to come back. We kept it spoiler free.
As he was probably sitting here and hearing us. But I will say, you both have played Subnautica, right?
Yeah.
No, but I'm pretty familiar with it anyway.
I will say I had a Subnautica moment.
Yeah.
And it was terrifying and exhilarating.
I do have one question regarding the mechanics of mobility in the game. Mm-hmm. Because you are in space, objects are going to have like different levels of gravity. Mm-hmm. So do you have to engage with the physics in that?
Yes.
Between large bodies, small bodies. And then the second question is, you played Prey as well, right? Did you ever play that?
I did not play Prey, but when you do go into of most of the mechanics of Prey.
Okay. When you go into space and Prey, it was one of the things that I talked about primarily as what I liked about the game when I played it, is that the navigation in space did feel very fluid and free, almost to a disorienting sense, you know, mm-hmm. because you can end up upside down very easily or spinning. Would you say that the craft has a pretty fair learning curve to navigating both a vacuum, but then different like levels of gravity and whatnot? Is steering your ship a hard part of the game that you get better at?
It's not difficult per se, but it's something you have to... It's easy to pick up.
Hard to master?
I will say that... after getting the hang of things, I did bounce my ship off of a planet. So it's like I wasn't paying attention to how fast I was going. And it was like...
is there like danger? Do you take damage?
I had to get out and repair the ship as it ricocheted off the planet. It was like... It's like the planets in the solar system that you're in are, at least the ones I've gone to, are fairly small. So the gravity that you have to deal with, it's like you're not dealing with gravity, you're dealing with a whole shit ton of gravity. You probably should have slowed down. Mm. They've got this cool thing of you can, when you're approaching a planet, you can actually, since everything's orbiting the sun,
mm-hmm.
like if you're just floating in space, you see everything orbiting the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, there's a mechanic where you can match the velocity by using like autopilot to match mm-hmm. the velocity, or you can use all of your scanners and systems.
So
you can use all your scanners and systems to match velocity yourself.
Okay. So we could also posit that without once again going too much into detail as to why or how, we could posit that maybe even knowing how the planets rotate, like how the system actually operates within, let's say, just a set period of time, like just hovering away and watching it for a while may even be valuable or useful information in the game. Like, is it a game that's forcing you to kind of take observation to a high level of scrutiny for whatever objective you're trying to accomplish next?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
I've played for maybe 3 hours. I've done various things and I've got questions still.
Okay.
This is me being as spoiler free as possible.
I know.
I appreciate it.
It's like, I'm trying to talk about this game without actually saying anything about this game. But it's great. It's worth the play, Outer Wilds. Yeah. If you've got Xbox Game Pass, just, I don't know why you don't.
I'm going to try and find an alternative outlet to access the game.
You mean, like, our matey?
Oh, no, I would never. And that's mostly because I don't know how. Or at least I don't feel comfortable on how to do it. But okay, it's on Epic Games, but I'm sure we could find it perhaps somewhere else.
Are you telling me you don't want to use the Epic Games Store launcher?
I've avoided it this far. I went so far as to buy the Outer Worlds instead of the Outer Wilds. So if I can also find an alternative option.
Sorry, Overdub is hilarious. But no. Oh, and I also re-downloaded Outer Worlds, so I'll actually give that a legitimate playthrough.
Mm-hmm.
But let me talk to you about my party game that I've been playing.
Yeah.
The After Party is a game where you find yourself in hell, and you're trying to get out of hell by out-drinking Satan. In so far, it's a... Hey, Neil, because I know you had me go and play Oxenfree. Was Oxenfree 3D?
No. Yes.
Okay, so it was like a 3D world with a like 2D plane, basically? Drawn?
I actually think there's an element of... So it used cel-shaded graphics, but I think it used some drawn elements on the models themselves to make it look more pencil cartoony. Very. Okay. When I say pencil, I maybe want to downplay that specific description.
Yeah.
But it definitely looks like a cartoon, if you want to think of it that way. But I actually think everything is 3D to an extent. But it is definitely designed to look more like it's on a, you know, in a cartoon, so to speak.
Okay.
And as I'm assuming you are aware of this, but to the audience as well, these two games are made by the same developer.
Yes. So Oxenfree is a game where you're exploring an island that you just came back to and some fuckery happens and there's a second playthrough that things change.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
There's replayability.
After Party is made by the same developers. You're in hell. And I'm guessing they know you've either played Oxenfree or just don't care because they're like, oh, I was going to say something. Well, we'll leave that for the second playthrough.
So wait.
In After Party, one of the lines in the game is from a demon that you meet is, we will leave that for the second playthrough.
Hmm. Okay.
Hmm.
So they are actively like telling you, hey, you're going to replay this game or you're going to want to replay this game. So they'll give you choices. They're like, oh, I'm going to give you some advice. I got two pieces of advice for you. Something will happen. And it's like, wait, what about that advice? It's like, well, we don't have time now. So I'll give you either advice one, the first piece of advice, or my second piece of advice. What do you want?
It's weird that the game is being very fourth wall breaking and telling you right away that, like, hey the real shit happens the second time.
Yeah, and it's like they give you a choice of, hey, you need to get into Satan's party in order to outdrink him, but you need a VIP pass. You can either do this thing or you can do this thing for your VIP pass. What do you want to do?
It definitely seems like it's obviously taking a very big tonal shift from what Oxenfree was, where Oxenfree is like a lot of mystique. This is all panache. Like,
yes,
this all is presentation, and it's like sensory overload. And yeah,
this one's definitely all about the party. Its unique mechanic is when you have a drink in your hand, you can drink it, and it gives you a third dialogue option. So you've always got two normal dialogue options, and then depending on the drink you have, it's a third one. It gives you a third one. So each drink, they give you a list of the ingredients inside of it.
Mm-hmm. Ginger in all of them for some reason.
Pretty much. They give you a list of the ingredients inside of them along with kind of what their attribute is. So one of my favorite drinks was unfortunately, a Jeffrey Dahmer. Was that his name?
I don't know who you're referring to. Jeffrey Dahmer?
The Unabomber? What was his name?
That's Theodore Kaczynski.
Oh, not the Unabomber then. The shooter at the one... God, there was a shooter named Jeffrey. anyway, mass murderer type thing, school shooting, Jeffrey Balmer. Oh my God, what is his name?
Laura Palmer, the woman who gets murdered in Twin Peaks. I think we have an idea that, holy cow, Scott just opened the door and it's light as...
Jeffrey Dahmer, the American serial killer. Anyway, he's got a drink and it makes you... It gives you more swag and panache, gives you more options to flirt with people. There's a drink called the Party Killer. So it just makes you a downer. And the drink is called it literally acid. And the description of the drink is it's acid. You're literally just drinking acid. No, seriously, just acid.
I mean, isn't that just absinthe?
Pretty much. Then we've had the latest drink I had was Bluebeard's ex-wife, which makes you talk like a pirate. I forgot what was in it, but it does not come with an alimony lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to be pretty fun, fourth breaking, no mystique in it. It's just like, hey, you and your friend are dead. You don't know how you guys died. You're in hell now. Deal with it or try to escape by playing a bunch of party games. I've done one party game so far just to get into Satan's Place, where I literally had a dance competition. So it was just the game of Simon QTE. The graphics and things seem unpolished in like a way of people were standing in line, but one guy was like 50 feet in the air, just standing in line.
Are you sure that's unpolished or is that a bug? Just like straight up rendered incorrectly because you did something that managed to mess up the code in some way. Not saying it's that your one. Fault. Like, it's obviously a bug, but...
Yeah, yeah, no, that one. Like, when they're walking through doors won't open. They'll walk through it, then the door will open. So just bugs like that. But it doesn't, like, get rid of any of the enjoyment. But After Party, it's a lot of fun. If you've played Oxenfree, it's got, like, nod and winks to... Hey, you've played our games before, so you'll probably enjoy this.
Okay, quick question for you. When you look at Oxenfree, for the most part, it's like it has humor in it, but the humor is all non-critical, we'll say.
Character related, yeah.
You could get rid of every joke in Oxenfree and it would more or less play the same way. So overall, it's a relatively serious narrative. Do you think that this game, After Party, has the same degree of seriousness to the story? I mean, is it serious at all?
It might get there because of like who the characters are and how they talk when you're not controlling them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely just one big joke of like, hey, you're in hell. These are bad people that you're hanging out with, killers, rapists. Oh God. I think one person stole from the people who hired them to babysit. They're like drinking alcohol from their people who hired them to babysit. That person ended up in hell and their torture was bad, but also hell is just like, demons just work a 9-to-5 at this point. And when they're not working, they're out partying and drinking. All drinks in hell are free. So what's the point of a happy hour type thing? I don't think it's going to explore anything serious.
I mean,
but it's interesting so far.
I don't know. Maybe you could find out why you're in hell. Like, that could be serious.
That we've asked the question a few times and... So far, the devil doesn't work collections, so not his department. The one person whose department it was, when we asked the question, it literally hit 6 o'clock. So he clocked out for the day, and it's like, why don't you just answer the question? Nope, come back tomorrow when we're open.
Yeah, I'm sure that has to be like the mystery, so to speak. Along with how you die, and they're probably related.
What if we're the worst people?
as of right now, I'm thinking that it was a suicide pact. Because the two main characters were just graduating from college, just found out that they've been friends since not elementary school, preschool. And the guy is staying in town. The chick is going away for a while. And they're going their separate ways after going through all of school together.
I mean, if it's a suicide pact, you would think that things would have to get pretty dark and serious at some point.
Yeah, you don't have flippant suicide pacts. Or at least I don't know how you write that in a way that is palatable to a general or wide audience.
Yeah, so that's at least my thought as of right now. I don't think they're trying to get the wide audience's approval in this game, though.
Yeah.
R is over not put it. They both might have slipped on a banana peel. Which, honestly, I would not put it past this game, because it's weird that so everyone gets their own personal demon, but these two, their demon is one demon. They get their package deal, even in hell. So they've been a package deal for their entire life. There was a thing that happened to where they're probably not going to be a package deal once they get back to life.
Mm-hmm.
But even in hell, they're a package deal.
Oh, yeah, that too. I mean, it could totally have you deal with the seriousness of separating your friendship or your bonds to one another if you end up having the opportunity for that, like, resurrection, right?
That would be the fork at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
do you abandon each other now that you've literally been through everything together, or
literally walk through hell together?
Yeah, or do you decide to endure hell together? Since if you are given a single demon, it's probably fair to assume that like you'd stick together in the afterlife as well.
The only thing I find troubling is that, not troubling like morally, so to speak, but troubling with that idea is I feel like it would have been a better suited, we'll say, theme of the game with these two characters just not knowing about a possible resurrection. Because having that basically hung in front of them from the start of the game would almost make me think that there's a possibility for it being more pressing and more, I don't know, we'll say like more serious in nature when it comes to wanting to become resurrected, because you know who is on the other side, the mortal realm, if you will, waiting for you, and what does your death actually mean for those characters? If they really wanted to go super super lighthearted about this and comical, I think they just would Annie up immediately and say, hey, you're dead and there's no way you can do anything about it. Now, granted, that defeats the motivation to outdrink Satan in this case, but they could write something else too. So I don't know.
Well, we'll see how the game progresses. I'm enjoying it. They did say like the reason the claws exist is to give people a little bit of hope, even in hell. And only two people have outpartied Satan: Buddha and Jesus.
It's pretty good. So is this hell like a little less traditional in the standpoint that like everyone has to go to hell and then they figure out who goes up to heaven afterwards? Or is it straight up you went to hell, so there's obviously something you did?
Yep. Yeah, okay. You're either going up or you went down. And in their case, they went down and they think it's a mistake. They also don't know how they died, because the reason they gave that you don't remember how you died is because, like, you know how you stop remembering your infant years? Your brain kind of just reboots to make room for more memories type of thing. So it's like, I'm like, oh, that's a plausible explanation. And they're like, yeah, your brain just reboots to make more memories for, you know, your afterlife. Because you're going to be here for eternity. Unless you outdrink the devil. Which no one can do.
What else have you been playing, Cookie?
Besides that, been playing a little bit of Killer Instinct. Looked at the jank that was Marvel vs. Capcom Ultimate, Tekken 7, and Forza. Oh, I guess Sea of Thieves. I've been meaning to jump on a Plague Tale Innocence, but you know, now with Xbox Game Pass, I just have the world is my oyster. It just access to hundreds of games. Hundreds. So it's just mostly fighting games at this point that I haven't had a chance to play because I didn't want to buy them. So what you guys been playing?
I jumped back onto the Catherine bandwagon, so to speak, just playing the hardest difficulty, or I think it's the hardest difficulty. I don't know if there's like a hardcore maniac mode or nightmare mode. If anything else, like the gameplay alone of Catherine and the puzzle elements to it are so much fun. And it, at times it kind of feels like the Dark Souls of puzzle games because there is a death condition. And it's so rewarding. It's like one of the most rewarding feelings getting through a puzzle that you have died more than like 10 times on. Pretty great. And then the other game that I've been spending a good amount of time on is Judgment. And I really just wanted to note that the story has gotten progressively more serious as you've went on and on. And it's so nice because Yakuza in general is such a ridiculous, over-dramatized tale about essentially a meathead. That's, I guess, all you can say about the protagonist that like always gets everything done no matter what. And even if he gets stabbed in a cutscene, he's going to be perfectly fine within the next cutscene, basically. But this story with this disgraced lawyer has started to like turn to an even more interesting mystery because like people around you are now actually getting offed or killed. And it feels like there's actually a degree of like something is at stake. Like I'm actually kind of worried that characters I'm working with right now may die. Whether it's going to turn out to be a good mystery or not, because I don't know if I've been introduced to the killer yet. I will say if I do know who the killer is, I would say that this mystery is going very well because I have no clue who the serial killer in this game is. It's good so far. And then last but not least, or last and least, because I've only played it for maybe an hour, I ended up buying Coffee Talk, which is that game that's kind of like Valhalla or the upcoming Nirvana, in which you make drinks for guests and they pour their heart out to you because I don't know why. They seem to have conversations that would be much better suited at their own table in the corner. And they're even at times given the option to like say, hey, you think we should go sit someplace else? Nah, this is fine. And then you proceed to eavesdrop on them for like an hour.
How does it make you feel to have two people talk about something? It's like maybe, you know, private or intimate. And when it's pitched, like, should we go somewhere else? Another person is saying, this guy does not matter. Don't worry about it.
Well, so that's the thing. They don't even really acknowledge the barista at that point in time. Mm-hmm. So while they are talking about whatever the heck it is, like money troubles or family troubles or love troubles, like Archibald the Ninth, which is the name of my barista, just like doesn't have any interactions in some cases until after the conversation is over, in which like we as players obviously have witnessed the entire thing, but the character, the barista, also, you know, acknowledges the fact that he heard everything, which also seems very, I don't know,
voyeuristic.
Yeah, that's like the best
Actually,
way to put it.
Good word. Yeah.
Thank you. I've been
it's also his favorite search query.
I didn't want to say that. Oh no! You now you know my shame.
No, there's something about it that doesn't necessarily feel like it's really well done in regards to the story. And the other thing that bugs the shit out of me is, and granted, this is something I do when I speak. So you know, but when it comes to a written narrative, I usually value the ability to avoid redundant word use. So if you're going to say something like story, describing the use of like a novel in one sentence. I don't want to have to read story, that word, another three times within the next two lines of text.
Mm-hmm.
It's small things like that that make me think that the writer of this game isn't necessarily a very experienced writer, which is normally not a problem in video games, but when it comes to a visual novel like this, it definitely grates on my nerves quite a bit. But that's all I can say about it so far. I'm not sure if I'm going to keep playing the game, but since I bought it, I may as well.
I was going to say, yeah, no.
That old sunk cost fallacy.
That's like one of your favorite genres. Being a barista, taxi driver, and our bartender.
Wait, taxi driver?
Oh, no. The taxi one hasn't come out yet, right?
Is there a taxi one? Because you're right. That seems right up my alley.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't tease Neil with this. If this game doesn't exist, you're doing mental harm.
I could have swore there was one that was supposed to be like, you're in a taxi, or maybe I'm thinking of Valhalla. Are you in a taxi at some point in Valhalla?
Nah, you make drinks out of weird-ass chemicals.
Okay. Maybe it's the next one that's coming out. It doesn't matter.
Sodium chloride. You just make salty drinks.
So I do have a question about Catherine, because you're playing full-bodied, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Are you playing as the Joker?
No, I am not.
Okay, well, that was my question.
Is there like a whole different story to it, maybe? Maybe.
I have no idea. You're the only one that's got the game.
Oh, I guess I can say something real quick about Catherine. So the first time I played through the game, I chose to pursue Rin, the new character, who turns out, I'm going to spoil this pretty hard. I think I might have
Thank
already
you.
Spoiled it.
You haven't. Fine for me. Thank you. I'm still curious.
So Rin turns out to, this is the way it's revealed to you. Rin turns out to be, it's never technically clearly implied, but it seems like she's a trans female.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But again, it's never extremely clear that she doesn't, and I say she because I believe that to be her identity, but I don't necessarily know for sure, because she also never necessarily implies or corrects anyone to use a specific pronoun. And I think maybe her approach on life in general is much more idealistic and whimsical in nature, that like, hey, you know, it doesn't matter what I am. What matters more is about how I feel and how you feel and that sort of thing. And down the Rin route, I think it does a pretty good job, minus some of the lack of detail to, you know, I feel like they definitely could have handled it a lot better. But the spirit of the story is really good. And the main character, who normally acts like a giant asshole in the original Catherine, starts to show like a lot of really, we'll say, idealistic, if not idealistic, like a lot of good traits as a person. Like, it seems like Rin brings out some of the best out of the protagonist, who is otherwise cheating on his girlfriend and doing a bunch of horrible things. So, I mean, like, I want to give him credit for that. Like, they make a really touching, heartwarming story about this woman and this man, and this man that essentially is, and at least down that route, able to like reevaluate his like sexual preference, I guess, to some extent. And realize that like it's not necessarily whether or not like gender doesn't necessarily matter. It's his feelings for this person that like that overpower anything else, any sort of social norms. But then, like, so up to that point, you know, that's essentially how I feel. But then, like, what they end up doing is more or less revealing that Rin is an alien and not actually even human to begin with, which, like, feels
undercutting all of the potential, like, value of it.
Right. And my whole theory before the game even came out was that Rin was going to be an angel, and that the whole, like, shock face that Vincent had was going to be because she had no genitalia, because angels don't have genitalia.
Or they have both.
Could be, yeah. Now, the issue is, what it turns out to be is basically that these aliens are technically more or less angels, because these aliens are the ones responsible for, like, basically every miracle that, like, humanity has ever experienced or had happen. So it's, like, kind of going on both, but still it's like very much implied that like what we think of as aliens did everything that we thought of being like miraculous angel-esque miracles of the past. So it's more that angels are aliens as opposed to aliens being angels, if you want to think of it that way. Mm-hmm. So that felt like it really cheapened it. So I mean, like in terms of story, it's kind of hard, but like ultimately the way the game resolves is that it still kind of resolves on a high note of the two being together in their present human form, so to speak. And it goes so far as to like pair characters together that you know are like kind of unrequited loves before. Erica ends up with Toby and everything seems to be like super positive for an ending. So it's like, okay, there's a nice bow tie on it. Whatever. It's fine. It was
okay.
You got
your golden route.
Yeah. More or less the golden route. Like as long as you're okay with not ending up with either of the other two Catherines. The problem I have playing this game and going down one of the traditional routes, sort of traditional, we'll say, is that you see all of the cutscenes that lead up to like essentially the point where Rin and Vincent are going to potentially end up together, but it ends immediately right before Vincent has essentially the epiphany that he's in love with Rin. And then it proceeds to more or less follow down the Catherine vanilla or the original Catherine storyline, which feels like it's extremely weird, with only so far like a few little dialogue bits from other characters in the bar saying, oh, it's too bad that piano player's gone. She sure did get really good in terms of her piano playing. So I don't know how else to describe it. It feels like they just kind of patched her story in, which is absolutely evident. And then as soon as you leave her route, the patch is now gone. Like it's just, you're back to what it was before. And it, in doing so, it causes like a huge chasm in what I would otherwise expect to have at least some closure on this character. But because you do not end up romantically involved with her, it feels as if she almost never existed.
Mm-hmm. And that's like, I was just about to ask. So do they even like write her out, or does she just ascend the staircase and just never come down?
Basically she leaves what was it?
Not the Fonz. It was Happy Days though.
Happy Days. Yeah. So she essentially, when the quote unquote, like biological gender reveal happens, if you want to call it that, I don't know like what the better term is. She basically doesn't think anything of it, and Vincent is like shocked and reacts kind of badly, just out of like in a knee-jerk response, which obviously, you know, is like pretty fucking bad of him, but whatever. So she runs away essentially, and he ends up having some phone calls with her, and Erica also acts as like an in-between for him for a bit, and they kind of figure things out to some extent. And it's at that point, this is happening at the bar now, but she's not there. They don't necessarily know where she is. It's at that point where Vincent would, if you're on her route, would realize that he's in love with Rin, and he would go chasing after her. But apparently, if you're not on that route, he's just like, yeah, okay, I guess she's fine. She has her memories back, and she said she's safe, so I guess we don't have to, like, you know, chase even after bother. Her. Which, oh, it's painful.
All right, that's good to know.
feels rough. Scott,
feels wrong.
Have you been playing anything other than Eye the Somnium Files?
I have, but considering where we're at on the time of the recording today, I can cache it for next time, and maybe I'll have that finished. As a quick preview, I picked up quite a while back on sale Death of the Outsider, Dishonored 2's kind of standalone DLC. I've been playing it. I am, I think, dead center in the like progression of the game. I'm pretty sure that my next mission is my last one, minus any big like twists or turns. And so I can probably just have it finished by the next time we record, and then I can talk about it at that point. Otherwise, I just have some like gameplay stuff, but I don't feel comfortable going into story yet since I'm only halfway into it.
So I,
the Somnium Files.
The Somnium Files. Let's go.
Or at this point, end game, like it's like a dead end tracker right now for me. Essentially, pursue a method of inquiry, like go through the dreams, pick whatever route at random is the one that I like. It obviously in I, the Somnium Files, what you do in a dream is not always evident to how it will turn out. And because of that, like I've more or less been picking whatever the consequences of my first or second like instincts are in an interaction. And so not reworking from different checkpoints, but if I end up taking a decision that takes me down, say the left branch or the right branch of unlocking something, just sticking with it as opposed to exploring what's the other option to unlock this or what is the different action that will potentially change the outcome of solving this this puzzle during the sink. And because of that, I have so far not gotten to a like satisfying ending of the game. I've gotten to character endings, which I don't understand how they play into the final picture yet. And I've gotten to dead ends where essentially Konami Date, the like primary investigator detective, is unable to move forward, but there is something ahead to be like addressed or experienced down the line when maybe I have more background. I don't actually know how you clear these gates necessarily, if you have to finish other storylines or if there are things you have to uncover in other storylines that give you access to progressing through these blocks.
And this whole thing is generally not something you see in visual novels. Usually it's like you have your branching paths.
But you get an ending of many.
So
this game really seems reluctant to give me the ending. And I also feel like there is the ending because it's a game where like my options my dialogue options outside of someone's Somnia or Somnium, that's what it is, outside of someone's Somnium are not, like my decisions don't have any weight until I'm actually inside the Somnium. The Somnium is where you have your binary choice that puts you on one path or another. And then everything else is you're along for the ride, kind of experiencing the investigation as Konami Date, or at least mostly from his perspective.
It's almost like you're not really even Date. Like I talked about this a bit before.
Yeah, I don't feel like Date.
It's almost like you're literally one small synapse in his brain that like can push him to do things, but like you're not actually in control of Date. You are basically one little nerve inside his stupid as hell brain.
I feel like it's the same experience that a lot of people get for the first time with like the unreliable narrator. Regardless, the one that's best known in I think like American education, right, is Nick in Great Gatsby, where we know like we can't always trust Nick, but he's the only one who's actually giving us the information, and so we have to go along with what's presented. That is how Date feels oftentimes. He may not pursue a lead in the same way we feel, but Date is our perspective, so we either get information through him or we don't get information at all. You know, the plot doesn't progress without his agency.
I'm kind of surprised you didn't bring up the Grapes of Wrath when it comes to unreliable narratives or narrators.
Is the Grapes of Wrath really about unreliable narrators, though?
It's not about it specifically, but wait. This is the novel where it's essentially four different POVs.
Is that the Grapes of Wrath? It's been a very long time since I've read it, but the Grapes of Wrath actually takes multiple perspectives. I mean, at one point in time, there's a chapter that like soliloquizes on the progression of a turtle across like a highway road. Like there's I think there's a lot of metaphor and whatnot under the surface. It has been close to a decade since I've read the book, though, which means I am absolutely not qualified to talk about it at this point with the limited memory I have. But I don't know if it's the best example of a reliable or unreliable narrator.
Oh, it's not. It's a Steinbeck book, though. I can't remember. All right, you know what? It doesn't
Steins
matter.
Gate?
What's that?
Yeah, it's Steins Gate is actually what you're thinking about.
don't talk too much on that. I still haven't even gotten past like 2 hours into that game.
Okay, fine. Fine, Neil.
So I want to ask you some specific questions about I. So you say character endings. So I take it you've gotten like...
I've gotten Ota's character ending. I've gotten Iris's character ending. Iris's character ending is very... it's very interesting because the last pieces of information that you get, I think, really give a lot of background context as to what's going on or part of the motive behind a certain action in the Cyclops killings. And that is the removal of an eyeball. And oh man, like as soon as I discovered the prototype, wait, should we be talking about this in front of Cookie?
I was actually just asking myself the same question. Wait, aren't I going to be playing this game?
Yeah,
I know
maybe
about
not.
This stuff?
Yeah, we can't. I don't think we can jump in
just,
on this.
Yet. I was going to say, I don't do any editing, so just do this when it's safe for me.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
Well, so I didn't necessarily have to like ask spoiler-specific questions. My bigger thing was...
But holy shit, Neil, we need to talk about it for 2 seconds.
Okay. So what about it with Iris's ending was...
Was revelatory?
Yeah. What thing in particular? Like, so specifically, you found the beta version or the prototype of the sync machine, right?
Iris's chapter, as it continues, has Date. Like, there is a point in time in which Date has to describe how the sync machine works from start to finish. He goes into big conceptual discussion about it.
And he talks about how it's essentially connecting through the eye socket.
How the eye socket, huh? That's really interesting.
Except
Sierra
with this...
and I think, huh, you know what? A lobotomy, you can access the brain by putting an ice pick through the eye socket, which if maybe you had a sensor, for instance, that went through the eye socket, through that optical nerve channel, you wouldn't have to wire all of these nanomachines around someone's eyeball. You just go straight through. It be interesting if you pull somebody's eyeball out and you hit him with a probe? And then all of a sudden, after Iris's somnium, her second one, glitching in the main, I think is what it is. Sinking in the main, that's what it is. What happens to Iris right before she dies? We see that she's had her eyeball removed. And it's after sort of a smoking gun scene earlier with Date reaching his hand toward her face before you start the sync.
So
what has our killer done? He's removed the same eyeball that all these other characters are missing and Konami Date already has missing. Has Date been synced with before?
Wait
a question there.
Wait a second, though. The boss told us that these killings aren't related. We don't need to know about the original Cyclops killings.
Hey, man, it could be Date again. Who knows?
So
also, there's the parallel universe thing, too.
One more quick thing before we can bring Cookie back.
Yeah.
So did you do the dream yet? The Iris dream where you interact with the TV and you knocked it the first time. Have you turned the dial?
Have I turned the dial? I can't remember now. Yeah, no, I have. I did turn the dial.
And because I asked you about this before, at the very end of that sink, you see a reflection in glass.
Who is that?
Do you remember who it is?
I'm pretty sure it's Date.
It's Date, and what does he seem to be doing?
It looks like he's about to pull somebody's eyeball out. Or is he choking someone?
He is choking someone. So we have Date choking somebody according to Iris's memories here. Like, what the fuck is happening, Scott?
But that's a parallel universe. There's also this opportunity in which every story path fits in with this parallel universe thing. And so the outcome changes on whatever the story path
okay,
is.
Okay, let me...
Can we bring Cookie back in?
Yeah, we will no longer be specific. There's going to be one more thing, but we can talk about this together. Okay, so yeah. Scott, what you're telling me is that there's a possibility that, like, if I were to hide two coins, or let's put it this way, two M&Ms, a red one and a blue one, in three cups, and the third cup is empty. And I'm going to push those forward for a second, all right? So you have the center, the right, the center, and the left.
And I'm going to wait for you to move those cups around. Like, I'm going to wait a while for the M&Ms to melt. That way, when you move them, I can see the streaks.
Well, I've already moved them, and I'm going to tell you, pick one of these cups. What you're implying is that by picking the right cup and finding red, that there's a possibility that there's two different universes where the center cup and left cup, even though I haven't touched him since you've lifted up the red or the right cup to reveal the red, there's two different possible universes where one cup, the center cup, could have no M&M and the left cup a blue M&M, but there's also a universe where the center cup could have the blue M&M.
A red M&M.
And then the left cup could have nothing. Do you believe that's a possibility? You don't think that the actions I took by mixing up the cups beforehand created only the one universe in which you're only able to... You're like, the one universe, and you are essentially creating the branches only through your actions?
Well, because I'm the only one perceiving it. We're gonna say yes for sake of
okay. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Okay,
and I'm also going to pitch that it would be a much easier metaphor if you used rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah, it probably would be. That definitely would have been the easier. I was struggling to come up with something that was not plot specific, I guess. But the question that I originally intended to ask while Cookie was around is that: do you still hate Ota? Like, without getting into specifics, after seeing his ending, do you still feel like you hate Ota?
He frustrates me, but I do not hate him.
He frustrates you, but, like, you understand his character. You maybe don't necessarily empathize with him, but to some extent, I take it you might sympathize with his situation?
He is not my son, but I will raise him.
yeah, because his... I alluded to this before, but this game does a really good job of making you care about characters. And Ota's ending is incredibly touching in ways that I was not prepared to be moved by.
One of the most tender moments I've experienced in this game is sort of the final sink in that storyline and the consequences thereafter.
Damn, I kind of want to replay this game.
Neil, this game is laggy, and it's not like it's obviously it's poorly animated, but it has some qualities that are just undeniably very good.
So what I started to think of too was that I wonder how much of your performance issues, not to say like anything about the animation and shit, that's absolutely not changing. But like when it comes to loading times, I know you brought that up to me at some point before. I don't remember there being any loading screens, but I also played it on PC.
Oh, man, it is not... the Switch is not built for it, I think, in some regards. There is a lot of hiccups with this game. And it's one of the biggest things that make me go, good game... Yes, game of the year, impossible, unfathomable. Like, there's too many rough edges that even if this were like an indie game made by one person who is able to somehow bribe people to be amazing voice actors, I still would be like, it's a great effort, but you're not there yet.
Man, I think we should talk about doing Parsec and doing 999 after you're done with I.
I'd be interested. You have turned me on to a type of game I would have never, ever played without you like pushing for it.
Nice.
I hate to say you're right. I hate to say it.
No, I mean, but... I think you can absolutely feel like this game is a bad game, and I would not... I'm not going to take that option away from you. Because
but
this
I
game
don't
is
feel that
it's I not for everyone though, right?
Yeah, I'd say there's definitely a barrier to entry, and some of it is open mindedness. Some of it is like just willingness to move through the things that you don't like about it. Perhaps you have to be, you definitely have to be going in with an intent to give it some passes on things, even with me playing it. But I'm happy that I have so far. There have been some moments that have been unbelievably funny and out of left field. Like the humor alone and some of the references for this game make me think, man, I wish more games did this.
There are some jokes that are like maybe a little too racy at times. Like, do you remember one with Mizuki saying something ridiculous?
One of my favorite moments, perhaps, is it when it may be, in fact, when Iris is talking to a friend of hers at the at the cafe, and they have a little phrase. They're talking about going to these events. Together as friends, and they're like, yeah, and we'll blow those boys away. And Mizuki, your like young what would you call her, you're essentially her guardian, Mizuki goes, yeah, blow those boys, and everybody at the table freezes. It's hilarious. It's super, super funny. It made Sierra and I almost do a spit take while we were playing.
I'm glad you guys received that as good, because I could definitely take that as being like a distasteful joke.
No, the way it's presented is incredibly like genuine and naive. Like it's funny and entirely, I think it's something that anyone could have like happen to them in the real world. It doesn't feel like it's a huge setup for a really unexpected or out of line joke.
Right.
But there are plenty of jokes that I think are kind of just like, well, you really have to be I think there are jokes that don't land for my sense of humor in particular, and I know it's coming from like a very different cultural background in humor, I'd say. Like there is some Japanese humor that I die for. I just think is amazing. And there's other stuff that I'm just like, you know, this ain't it. Like this is not for me.
Did you encounter the Pop Team Epic references?
But I don't know Pop Team Epic.
Okay.
So, I'm sure I have.
All right. I feel bad because I think we're boring Cookie into a Zen space
into
at this point.
Into a Zen. No, I'm excited to play this game and
Cookie, you'll enjoy it.
Multiverse Theorem with plastic cups and melting M&Ms. I'm confused.
Have you ever heard of Schrodinger's cat before?
No, let's not talk about that.
that was the moment in 999 where they brought up Schrodinger's cat, and I was like, God damn it, they're doing it. Everyone fucking does this. And then they actually did a good job on it.
This game actually doesn't bring up Schrodinger's cat yet, or hasn't.
Because they brought it up in 999 already.
Yeah, they just did a different route. I can say, though, for sure, playing this game within the last week and knowing that Cookie was interested in picking it up, I can say that it is going to be a good recommendation for any of the three of us. Like, we all have a very different niche in gaming that we like to apply ourselves to. I think that this will fit each one of our niches, maybe in unexpected ways.
I think with Cookie, because this is like a 30-hour game, I'm guessing, right around 32 hours or so is what I spent. And I might have spent more time than you, Scott, I'm not sure, touching or clicking on every single button.
Gross.
I could.
Yeah, I did stop interacting with the environment as much.
Yeah, you didn't get the secret ending.
What's that?
You can, do you want me to tell you?
Yeah, you might as well. I don't think I'm going to hit it.
If you keep clicking on the receptionist and you keep asking the receptionist questions, like maybe you want to go on a date or something, there might be a timeline where Date and the receptionist live happily ever after.
Oh, that's funny. Her reptilians joke is amazing. And I won't say any more on that. I feel like there are some like potential endings for the receptionist, though, because I also had Iba threaten to like pop out of my eyeball at one point in time.
And then you backed down, huh?
Yeah, I backed down. But I backed down in the way that you can only back down when the game says, okay, that's enough now. AI the Somnium Files. I the Somnium Files. Unexpected in every way imaginable. And I think that's probably about it for the podcast today. You can reach us at podcast@fancyramen.com.
You can also watch us live at twitch.tv/cookieskimilk, CUKISKMILK, or the Fancy Ramen TV. Is that it? Don't hesitate to find us to watch our Fancy Ramen, as I like to call them, the B crew at J Frey All Day. I don't have the other ones.
Artie Strongman is the other one.
With underscores between each of those three names or words.
Between Artie, Strong, and Man.
Is it rude for me to call them the Fancy Ramen B team?
Oh, I mean, I'd say like bench team, really.
Bench warmers.
I'm just kidding. I would love to have them on again sometime soon.
If I figure out how to make things sound good in a single recording,
mm-hmm.
like a single channel, so to speak,
right?
Then we can really have a low bar to pass for like channel or podcast participation, and that bar would be Discord.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Speaking of one bar that we want to overcome, please tell your family and friends about the podcast. The best way to help us out is to spread the word. We'll do the rest of the work of endearing people to our very unique form of audio media. Don't laugh at that. You're undercutting my whole sales pitch.
All right. That's it for episode 148 of Fancy Ramen.
Bye.
I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott. We'll see you next week.